Hello, I'm R.A. Spratt. I write and perform this podcast. If you'd like to support the show, I'm a children's author, so you can buy a book by me, or you can buy me a coffee by going to buymeacoffee.com/storiesrasspratt. It's an easy way to make a small thank you gift to the show so I can keep kicking this can down the road. The podcast directory you're using right now should have a link to my Buy Me a Coffee page in the show notes, or you can type it into your browser. That's buymeacoffee.com/storiesrasspratt. All contributions are gratefully appreciated. Hello and welcome to Bedtime Stories with me, R.A. Spratt. All right, well, I don't think I've got much news to report this week. It's the school holidays, so I'm recording this a couple of days early so I can spend some time with my kids this week. Well, before we get into it, I should explain for our American listeners, because in Australia and the UK, we have slightly different terminology for biscuits and cakes. So in Australia, we call cookies biscuits. They call them that in the UK too. So in this story, I'm going to talk about chocolate biscuits. And in your mind, when you hear me say chocolate biscuits, just say to yourself, oh, she means chocolate cookies, because that's what I'm talking about. In Australia, in fact, we have these very specific chocolate biscuits slash cookies that are called Tim Tams, which are delicious. And if you ever come to Australia, which you all should at some stage, please try Tim Tams. They're so good. You'll love them. So I'm actually describing Tim Tams when I talk about the chocolate-dipped, chocolate-filled chocolate biscuits. They're really good. Okay, that's all you need to know. Let's get into it. All right, so we're doing a Greek myth today. We're doing the story of Theseus and the Minotaur, as told by Nanny Piggins. Nanny Piggins, Boris and the children, had been grounded. Not by Mr. Green. He knew he did not have that level of authority over their behaviour. They had been grounded by the police sergeant. Normally, Nanny Piggins wouldn't acquiesce to his authority either, but the police sergeant was much more diplomatic than Mr. Green. He knew Nanny Piggins was, at heart, a well-meaning pig, and even if she thought his request was an outrageous violation of her pigstitutional rights, she would do as he asked if he asked very nicely and bribed her with a packet of chocolate biscuits. On this occasion, he had asked them to stay at home between the hours of 12 noon and 1 p.m. You see, his inspector was coming to inspect the police station. If he could get Nanny Piggins to stay in her own house for that window of time, the police sergeant was confident he could handle the rest of the crime taking place in Dulsford that day. To be clear, the police sergeant did not in any way think that Nanny Piggins was a criminal. He did deeply respect her. Indeed, she had on many occasions helped him apprehend criminals, even when he didn't want her to. She was especially good at apprehending her own sisters. But Nanny Piggins had a way of instigating chaos. And while chaos was not strictly speaking a crime, it could lead to crime, like traffic jams caused by chocolate workers going on strike because Nanny Piggins advocated that they should each be paid $1 million a year for creating the most culturally important product in the world, or librarians committing assault because she refused to follow the rules about being quiet in the library, or headmasters who leapt out of windows and hijacked cars to escape their own schools because it was parent-teacher interview night and Nanny Piggins had just RSVP'd that she was coming. On the whole, it was easier if, just for 1 hour, Nanny Piggins stayed home. So, after accepting 20 boxes of chocolate-dipped, chocolate-filled chocolate biscuits, Nanny Piggins begrudgingly agreed to stay within her own home for the hour that the inspector would be visiting. The children had agreed to stay with her in case her willpower lapsed and she tried to escape. And Boris stayed too because the police sergeant thought it would be hard to explain to the inspector why there was a 10-foot-tall, 700-kilogram bear dancing down the main street, so the police sergeant had bribed him too with a honey sandwich. If you ever do need to bribe a bear, you don't need to offer them much because chances are staying home and napping was what they were planning to do anyway. Oh my gosh, this is so boring, complained Nanny Piggins as she shoved another chocolate biscuit in her mouth. They'd only made it 23 seconds into the hour of home isolation and she was already starting to crack. Why don't you read a book, suggested Samantha. You love reading, especially romance novels and crime novels and romance novels where the heroines commit crimes. Yes, but reading is no fun when someone tells you to do it, complained Nanny Piggins. Reading is best done late at night, when you've been forbidden to read, because you have a maths test at 9 a.m. the following morning. But your parents keep finding you secretly reading, so they take all the light bulbs out of your room and confiscate all the flashlights. But they don't know about the secret flashlight that you've got hidden in a hollowed-out leg of your desk chair. Then you desperately have to read it as quickly as you can before the batteries run out. Otherwise, you'd have to wait until morning to find out if Lady Marguerite Blackenburg Hatsbridge falls in love with the Wicked Duke, because she finds out he's only being pretending to be wicked because he is secretly a spy for His Majesty's government. And then they get married and start a dog sanctuary. Then why don't you tell us a story, suggested Michael. Yeah, you love telling stories, agreed Derek. I do, especially the exciting bits, and the bits where I get to do silly voices, agreed Nanny Piggins. But I am so traumatised by being under house arrest, I can't think of any. It's only been 52 seconds, said Samantha. I know, said Nanny Piggins. It's a good job that I've never been convicted of an actual crime. If I had to do a life sentence, I would be so cross. Well, why don't you tell us the story of Theseus, said Derek. You told us the first half of his story about the 6 baddies he defeated on the journey to meet his father, but he said what happened next was another story for another day. Well, today is another day, so why don't you tell us now? Ah, yes, my dear great-great-great times many greats cousin Theseus, Piggins, said Nanny Piggins. But you've misremembered, my dear boy. My cousin Theseus was a woman. Oh, yes, sorry, of course, said Derek. The history books they made us read at school confused me. And of course, she was also a pig. Yes, the history books are always saying that she was a human man, said Nanny Piggins. I think it's because it's hard to paint a really beautiful athletic pig on the side of an urn. So to make it easier for themselves, the urn painters got the historians to change the story. Now, where did I leave off? Well, Theseus had gone to the palace to meet her father, but when she got there, she found out her father was married to a witch, said Samantha. Oh, yes, of course, said Nanny Piggins. The queen was a wicked witch, and she'd cast dark magic over the king of Athens, who was Theseus's real dad. Now, when they say it was magic, it makes it sound as if she was casting spells and feeding him potions. But more realistically, she was probably just an incredibly beautiful woman who the king was desperately in love with, so much so that he let her do whatever she liked. In fact, she may well have been another one of my distant cousins. She sounds like the type. Anyway, Theseus was wary of this queen, so Theseus didn't reveal who she was straight away. But the king was a jolly fellow. He urged his guest to have the honour of carving up the roast meat for the feast. Theseus didn't like to appear rude, so she drew her sword, ready to do the carving. But the king cried out, "Stop!" because he had immediately recognised the sword. "Hey, that's my sword!" cried the king. "Yes, yes it is," agreed Theseus, "because you are my father." "Don't believe her!" cried the wicked queen. "You buried this under a huge rock and instructed my mother to wait until I was strong enough to move the rock before sending me to you," explained Theseus, "because you would need me to help you fight." "I did," said the king. "That does sound like me. Well, I'm glad to see the sword again. I had wondered where I left it." "So who do you want me to fight, father?" asked Theseus. "Perhaps this witch." "Oh, I think I left a fire on in the kitchen," said the queen. "I'll be back in a sec." The queen left the room, but she did not go to the kitchen. She ran away, realizing that her jig was up. "Is there anyone else you'd like me to fight?" asked Theseus. "Oh, no," said the king. "We always lose fights, so we've stopped trying. The king of Minos beat us in the last war, and to punish us, we have to send 14 young people to Minos every year to be devoured by the Minotaur." "What's a Minotaur?" asked Theseus. "Oh, it's a monster," explained the king. "It's half human, half bull. It's so strong it can crush your skull and rip your arms off before eating you." "That's gross," said Theseus. "Yes, and the king of Minos is kind of nuts. He had a labyrinth built under his castle, and the labyrinth is so complicated with winding corridors and staircases that it's impossible to find your way out again. And right in the middle of the labyrinth is the Minotaur, waiting to eat anyone who enters." "Why? I don't really know," said the king of Athens. "It's very unpleasant. If you ever go to visit the palace, you can hear the Minotaur stomping about underneath you. I think it's to terrify the people, because if anyone defies King Minos, he shoves them in the labyrinth with the Minotaur." "And you send 14 youths every year to be fed to this monster?" asked Theseus. "I don't have a choice," protested the king.
You could not do it, said Theseus. But then King Minos would get really mad and start a war again, argued the king. Then way more than 14 people a year would die.
Dad, this is bonkers, said Theseus. You've got to put a stop to it.
Oh, if I tried, said the king, King Minos would feed me to the Minotaur, and I don't fancy that either.
All right, fine, I'll put a stop to it, said Theseus. I'll go over with the other young people as one of the sacrifices.
Oh, no, you're my daughter. I don't want you to get ripped apart by the Minotaur. We've only just met, and I was kind of hoping you'd protect me from my 40 nephews who are constantly trying to kill me.
I'll deal with the 40 nephews later, said Theseus. This Minotaur needs to be sorted out first.
But over there in Minos, they'll recognise you. You've got really famous for slaying the 6 baddies on the road to Athens. They'll know you're a monster slayer.
Then I'll go in disguise, said Theseus.
What sort of disguise? Asked the king.
Wait here, I'll show you.
Theseus stepped out of the throne room. There was a donkey just outside.
Perfect. She strode over and sliced off a tuft of the donkey's tail, then grabbed some glue and stuck the hair to her top lip. Theseus stepped back into the throne room.
Hey, you there with the mustache. Have you seen my daughter, Theseus? Asked the king. She just stepped out for a moment.
Father, it is I, said Theseus.
What? Said the king.
Theseus took off the fake mustache.
Oh, Theseus, it's you. Hey, where did the guy with the mustache go?
That was me too, explained Theseus.
Look,
Theseus stuck the mustache back on.
Oh my goodness, what dark magic is this? Exclaimed the king.
It's not magic, it's a fake mustache, said Theseus. I made it out of donkey hair and glue.
Wow, that's brilliant, said the king. Put it back on again.
Theseus put the mustache back on.
Wow, you're unrecognizable. They'll never guess it's you.
So Theseus set sail with the other 13 young sacrifices and a mustache glued to her lip. The ship carrying the sacrifices had black sails to signify the sadness of their mission. And the king made Theseus promise that on the return voyage, if she survived, she would put up white sails so the king would know she was all right. Now, as you know, everything was very different in the ancient Greek story days. You would think having demanded that Athens send over 14 young people to be ripped apart and eaten by the Minotaur, the people of Minos would just get on with it. But no, King Minos threw a week-long party and expected all the young sacrifices to attend.
Well, that's just weird, said Derek.
I know, but on the bright side, it did mean they got to eat a lot of cake, because every night there was a big feast, and every day there would be games, a bit like the Olympic Games, with a different sport every day. And the young people from Athens had to compete against the young people from Minos. There were run-in races, wrestling matches, spear throwing, and feats of strength. And of course, Theseus, being super strong, athletic, and brilliant, she won everything.
Now, everyone in Minos had to come and watch the games. It was the rules, including the king's daughter, Princess Ariadne. Now, Ariadne was not the happiest princess. It was not a great life having a monster for a brother and a tyrant for a father. Family dinners never went well.
So when she saw Theseus with her mustache performing these amazing feats of athleticism and showing such good sportsmanship and gracious good nature, Ariadne fell in love with Theseus at first sight.
Oh, said Samantha.
And she desperately didn't want anything bad to happen to Theseus. So the night before the young people from Athens were due to be fed to the Minotaur, Ariadne snuck out of the castle and went to meet with Theseus. She soon found him.
Oh, Theseus, I love you desperately, admitted Ariadne. Oh, well, that's nice, said Theseus, but I'm not actually focused on dating at the moment. I'm more focused on overcoming the monster and saving 13 young people from certain death.
Because I love you, I cannot let you die, gushed Ariadne. I shall betray my father and help you destroy my brother, the Minotaur.
Oh, well, I'm grateful for the help, but I'm slightly concerned about your lack of family loyalty, said Theseus.
I asked the genius Daedalus, the architect of the labyrinth, to tell me the secret to escaping it, said Ariadne.
Well, okay, that would be really helpful, said Theseus. What did Daedalus say?
Daedalus gave me this ball of string, said Ariadne, handing over an ordinary ball of string.
String, said Theseus. You want me to face a giant murderous monster tomorrow with a ball of string?
Daedalus says, when you enter the labyrinth, tie the string to the door handle behind you, then unravel it as you walk. After you defeat the Minotaur, you can use the string to retrace your footsteps.
Okay, I can see a couple of flaws in that plan, said Theseus, but I'll give it a go.
I also got this for you, said Ariadne, taking out a great big super sharp sword.
Whoa, I'm not sure about that, said Theseus. You can have someone's eye out with that.
Yes, the Minotaurs, said Ariadne.
Oh no, I'm more likely to stumble in the dark labyrinth and cut myself with it, said Theseus. You hang on to that, I'll figure something else out.
So the next day, Theseus and the other 13 youths were taken to the entrance of the labyrinth. They were understandably terrified. The heavy wooden door was open for them, and they all, resigned to their fate, went inside. Theseus was first across the threshold. She tied the string to the door.
Okay, you guys, stay here. I'll go and deal with the Minotaur.
She walked through the underground maze, unwinding the string as she went, going upstairs and down, around corridors, turning corners. It was really hard to navigate, but she always knew which way to turn to get closer to the Minotaur, because the Minotaur had really bad body odour. So she was able to make her way closer and closer by following his scent. Eventually, she came to the centre of the whole labyrinth, and it opened out into a huge room. And she knew she was in the right place, because this room really stank of monster.
Yoo-hoo! Called Theseus. Hey, Minotaur, are you at home?
Roar! Cried the Minotaur.
Out of the shadows burst the wild beast. He had the body of a man, but his neck and shoulders were that of a bull with two huge horns. And the Minotaur rushed straight at Theseus.
Whoa, hold up, don't kill me, said Theseus.
But I'm so hungry, said the Minotaur, and Uber Eats will not deliver down here.
Well, that is awful, said Theseus, but I think I can help you.
I know you can help me by standing still so I can tear you apart and eat you, said the Minotaur.
Yes, but that would only be a short-term fix to your problem, said Theseus. I don't want to be judgmental, but you do appear to have some anger management issues. Now, everyone upstairs thinks it's because you're a brutal monster, but I was wondering if it might be because you have some digestive issues.
What are you talking about? Asked the Minotaur.
Well, there's this thing called the gut-brain axis. It's the two-way biochemical signaling that takes place between the gastrointestinal tract and the central nervous system. Basically, it means that the food you eat affects your mood.
How? Asked the Minotaur.
Well, you know how you're half bull? Asked Theseus.
Yes, said the Minotaur.
Well, bulls are ruminants, explained Theseus. That means they have four stomachs, and their stomachs are designed to digest grass. Only grass.
Huh? Said the Minotaur.
I think you're cranky, because really, you're a vegetarian.
Don't say that! You'll ruin my image, said the Minotaur.
You shouldn't care what other people think of you, urged Theseus. You need to look after your own health. Tell me, when you've eaten 14 people, how do you feel the next day?
A bit grouchy usually, admitted the Minotaur.
Have you ever tried eating anything else? Asked Theseus.
Well, I don't have any grass down here, said the Minotaur.
Yes, it was a bit silly locking a half-bull person in here with no grass, agreed Theseus. But there is actually vegetarian food that's even better than grass.
There is? Asked the Minotaur.
Have you ever tried cake? Asked Theseus.
Cake? Asked the Minotaur.
He'd never heard of this word before. Yes, cake. It's really good, said Theseus. Here, I brought some with me. Try some.
Theseus produced a beautiful big brown chocolate mud cake.
What, she just happened to be carrying a cake? Asked Derek.
Yes, she was a Piggins, said Nanny Piggins.
Oh, of course, said Derek. Sorry.
Oh, it smells so good. Much better than a human, said the Minotaur.
Have a bite, urged Theseus.
Do I have to kill it first? Asked the Minotaur.
No, it's inanimate. It doesn't mind being eaten, Theseus assured him. In fact, for cake, its sole purpose is to be eaten.
Theseus handed the Minotaur a cake fork, and the Minotaur cautiously took a small bite.
Oh, my goodness! This is the most delicious thing in the universe, cried the Minotaur.
I know. Have a whole slice. Theseus cut the Minotaur a large slice.
My stepfather is the true monster here. Locking me in a labyrinth and forcing me to eat nothing but Athenian people when there was food as good as this in the world.
And there's plenty more where that came from, said Theseus. There are whole shops that sell all different types of delicious cakes. They're called bakeries.
Bakeries! Yum, said the Minotaur.
If you come with me now and promise not to kill any more people, I will take you to a bakery. And so Theseus and the Minotaur left together, easily finding their way out by following the string. The other youths were terrified when Theseus emerged with the Minotaur, but they were all very grateful not to have their limbs ripped off, so they didn't complain. The Minotaur got a job at a local bakery. Being incredibly strong, he was very good at carrying big sacks of flour. So the baker was delighted too, particularly because the Minotaur was happy to accept his wages in the form of cake. And Theseus snuck away, or rather sailed away, with all the youths safely rescued. Ariadne ran away with them as well, because her father was going to be very cross when he found out he had betrayed her. So what happened with Theseus and Ariadne? Asked Samantha. Well, that was a bit awkward, said Nanny Piggins. On the way back to Athens, they stopped at an island called Naxos. Theseus was just about to remove her false mustache and explain everything to Ariadne when one of the Greek gods turned up.
Oh, no, not Zeus, exclaimed Samantha.
No, not Zeus. It was Dionysus, the god of partying, who was actually a really nice god. And as soon as he saw Ariadne, he fell in love at first sight.
Wow, plot twist, said Michael.
It was a big relief for Theseus. She wasn't ready to settle down yet, said Nanny Piggins. She'd heard about this guy called Jason, who wanted help finding a golden fleece, and planned to set out on an adventure with him. But that's a story for another day. The main thing is, Ariadne happily married Dionysus, and Theseus sailed back to Athens with the young people she had rescued. Unfortunately, so much had happened that Theseus totally forgot to swap her black sails to white sails. When the king of Athens, who we have already established was quite a silly man, saw the ship returning with black sails, he was devastated and he threw himself off a cliff.
Oh no, said Samantha. That's awful, wailed Boris.
Luckily, he was so silly, it was a very short cliff, so the king only sprained his ankle, said Nanny Piggins. And it taught the king a valuable lesson about not being so melodramatic when you're a king and you're supposed to be in charge and looking after everybody. So they all lived happily ever after. The end. Time for bed.
But Nanny Piggins, it's only 1:05 in the afternoon, said Michael.
It is, said Nanny Piggins. That means our hour of house arrest is over. Quick, children, let's run into town and find the ice cream van.
Which is exactly what they did do. The end. And that's the end of the story for this week. Until next time, goodbye.